Welcome back, my friends. Ecclesiastes 3 today, one of my all-time favorites. Solomon takes a break from his grand experiment and stops to reflect. Chapter 3 is like, well, have you ever tried to clean out a closet and got lost in a box of old photos, reeling in the years over old friends and forgotten dreams? Chapter 3 is like that. Time just keeps moving forward. Not even 1.21 gigawatts can send you back. I'll admit, I'm an 80s kid, and I love my music. But now it's on the oldie station. And every once in a while, I get nostalgic, caught up in the old pictures. Not so much missing the glory days as wondering. Life moves so fast and so slow all at once. But how does it all fit together? That's pretty much where Solomon's at, starting at verse 1. There is a time for everything, and a season for every activity under the heavens, a time to be born and a time to die, a time to plant and a time to uproot, a time to kill and a time to heal, a time to tear down and a time to build. Solomon goes on, looking again and again at the times of life. It's amazing the variety that comes in one lifetime and the contrast. The word time here means more than just days and hours. It denotes an appointed time. Solomon sees that God designated the times of life in all their variety. In verse 4, a time to weep and a time to laugh, a time to mourn and a time to dance. The contrasts of life are so striking. Weeping and laughter, mourning and dancing, scattering and gathering, embrace and refrain, search and give up, keep and throw away, tear and mend, silence and speaking. Everything has its time. Finally, in verse 8, a time to love and a time to hate, a time for war and a time for peace. But then, it's as though Solomon sets down the shoebox of memories and tries to piece it all together. Sometimes life feels like a puzzle without a box top. Some pieces go together beautifully. Some just don't fit. So with the pictures of life all laid out, verse 9, what do workers gain from all their toil? We're back to the big question. When you've done your all and look back on everything, what is gained? Verse 10, I have seen the burden God has laid on the human race. He has made everything beautiful in its time. He has also set eternity in the human heart. Yet no one can fathom what God has done from beginning to end. Looking through your box of memories, there is a beauty to every stage. Even in the hard times, there is a wonder to life. God made it beautiful in its time. But then, its time is done. Through all the memories and pictures, we long to give them lasting meaning, but they all fade. But the heart longs for something that lasts. But why? Why can't our stubborn hearts just be satisfied with the now? I'll tell you why. Verse 11, God set eternity in our hearts. That longing for glory comes from our Maker. There is a hole in every heart the size of eternity, and nothing on earth can fill it. Now, Solomon's solution is good, but not quite complete. Remember, the view is limited, but the lesson from it is essential. Verse 12, I know that there is nothing better for people than to be happy and to do good while they live, that each of them may eat and drink and find satisfaction in all their toil. This is the gift of God. I know that everything God does will endure forever. Nothing can be added to it and nothing taken from it. God does it so that people will fear him. And once again, wisdom brings us back to the fear of God. Fear as in respect, awe. All of our works have a beauty in their time, but only God's work is eternal. So there is eternity in our heart, but mortality in our flesh. And that tension can be frustrating. And why did God do it to us? I found some insight in Romans 8. For the creation was subjected to frustration. The word frustration is actually the Greek version of vanity or meaningless. So it says creation was subjected to vanity, not by its own choice, but by the will of the one who subjected it. That means God did it on purpose at the curse. Remember Genesis 3? Work by the sweat of your brow and toil? So why did God do it? Back in Romans, in hope that the creation itself will be liberated from its bondage to decay and brought in to the freedom and glory of the children of God. In other words, God cursed mankind and frustrated our work with toil and vanity so that we would revere him, so that we couldn't be satisfied until we seek him out and find the freedom and glory of being his child. Catch that? Glory, the opposite of vanity, the only thing that can satisfy the eternity in our hearts. And it happens when we accept God's invitation to be adopted as his child. And as we get to work for him, suddenly our work has purpose, because now it's God's work through us. That's why 1 Corinthians says, "Your labor in the Lord is not in vain." But again, Solomon doesn't get all that. He is far from God. But as he considers God, Solomon thinks through another dilemma of life here on earth: justice. Back in the box of old photos, as you look over all the pictures, the works of mankind on earth, some are good, but many are evil. So in verse 15, God will call the past to account. To make sense of the big picture, there must be a time for judgment, for God to call the past to account. That's good, but what about justice here and now? Verse 16, "And I saw something else under the sun. In the place of judgment, wickedness was there. In the place of justice, wickedness was there." Justice here on earth is oftentimes far from just. So Solomon looks forward. "I said to myself, God will bring into judgment both the righteous and the wicked. For there will be a time for every activity, a time to judge every deed. God has his own picture box of your life, and every deed will have its time in court." Then verse 18, "I also said to myself, as for humans, God tests them so that they may see that they are like the animals. Surely the fate of human beings is like that of the animals. The same fate awaits them both. As one dies, so dies the other." Now, don't misread this. The Bible clearly tells us that mankind is different from animal, uniquely made in God's image. But here, God tests us, puts us through trial, so we will see that we still die, same as the animals. And what happens after death? Well, Ecclesiastes doesn't go that far. Remember, the viewpoint is stuck here on earth. It seems that God wanted to use this book to let us consider, on those days when we toy with that idea, that maybe this life really is the whole story. Maybe I should just live for the moment and forget eternity. Look back at all the pictures. Something in here's got to be enough to satisfy. Oh, but the heart longs for more.
Join us next time as we continue the journey, one chapter at a time. And remember, faith comes by hearing, and hearing through the Word.